Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You know, summer is coming, the sun is shining, shirts are off, and your balls are smooth. You heard me right. Your friends at Manscaped, they're here to make sure that your beach balls are as smooth as the Floridian sand, my friends. In the summertime, you know, you want to kill some cold beers and some barbecues, not kill the vibe with your pubes peeking out of your swim trunks. That's why Manscaped has their Performance Package 4.0. That's to keep the party in your pants, my friend, looking crisp and refreshing all summer long. 4 million men have trusted Manscaped. Why shouldn't you? It all starts and stops by going to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping if you use my promo code Bubba. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 has everything that you need to prepare for that summer bod. Inside this package, you're going to find the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance Boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold it all, my friends. You want to take your grooming game even further? Take a look at the Manscaped Shears 2.0. In that package, it has everything that you need to look pristine. Nail cutters, tweezers, grooming scissors. Go to manscaped.com and go crazy. They got everything you potentially possibly could need. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Bubba at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code Bubba at manscaped.com. This is the summer to turn your package into the full package, my friend, and it all starts and stops at Manscaped. Listen, I have had my Manscaped stuff now for about a year. I don't know what I would do without it. As a matter of fact, I've now got all my co-hosts on the Manscaped deal. All the male co-hosts on my show have almost everything Manscaped offers. Why wouldn't you? Reduce the risk of ingrown hairs. You reduce the risk of grooming accidents. Again, all of this craziness starts and stops at manscaped.com. Use promo code Bubba for 20% off.
Mark Furman, he lives in Idaho now.
We got him on hold
now,
here.
Brent, you got to help me out on this deal, Brent. You got to thoroughly help me out on this deal because you read the book or a lot of the book, and I just know Mark Furman for obviously for what he's been in.
Yeah, I read the book.
What's it called?
Murder in Spokane, about Robert Yates, a serial killer in Spokane, Washington, that Mark helped catch. Actually, it's a.
What's up, Mark Furman?
How are you?
I'm fine. You live in Idaho now.
I do.
Now, how bad was it, Mark? Did you have to get out of L.A. or you just chose to?
No, I was gonna leave. I plan to do this where I live now. I plan to retire at 20 and leave and come up here 2 years before Simpson killed a couple people.
So you mean after you had 20 years on L.A., then you decided to get to, you already had a plan even before O.J. did what he did.
Yeah, I was. You know, I had a long range plan, unlike Simpson.
Allegedly.
Now, no, don't say
yeah,
allegedly. No, there's no allegedly.
Why do we have to say allegedly?
I ain't saying it. I'll tell you one thing. That's one of my producers who's being a dick. Help. Furman, and most of America thinks he did it. So, hell, why not say it? Furman, it was real close to the case.
And I will say this, that Mark Furman, he helped solve the Martha Moxley case, which, you know, Michael Skakel, one of the Kennedy clan beater with a golf club. He is, you know, from reading his book, he is a very good investigator.
Hey, Furman, why did you get such a bad rap? Did you not get railroaded?
Oh, I don't know. You know, we could whine all we want. We could say, you know, the old poor me thing. But, you know, you let everybody say what they're going to say, and then you go ahead and do what you do and let the chips fall where they may. You know, the Simpson team, they had to attack me. I knew it. When I got off that stand in the prelim in July of 1994, I knew something was going to happen to me. I don't care what it was, because they couldn't attack my police work. They couldn't attack the way I testified. They couldn't do anything with the evidence they had. They all knew their client was guilty. They're a bunch of whores to go ahead and attack the messenger because they want to make a lot of money clearing a famous celebrity athlete so they can get bigger cases for more money an hour. That's it in a nutshell.
And now, Mark, where did the LAPD go wrong in the investigation deal? You know, when they tried to preserve the DNA or not getting enough DNA swatches? Or, I mean, you know,
they didn't do anything wrong.
They didn't do anything wrong.
They didn't do, well, you know, this is what I told Marcia Clark, and it really puts the whole case into perspective. I said, Marcia, everything the defense is challenging, probably upwards of almost 100 pieces of evidence, including the glove,
right,
in your final arguments, tell the jury don't consider any of this evidence that the defense has challenged. Not one piece that they have challenged. Just pay attention to the other 200 pieces of forensic evidence that point to one and one person only in this planet, O.J. Simpson. And then you really have really the perspective of this case. They only attacked the evidence that they could attach some human connection with that does the same things, makes the same pauses or takes off their gloves or sets something in the trunk. It goes on every day.
So the bottom line is, if they wouldn't have, there's 300 some pieces of evidence, let them take their hundreds, they're disputed, and whatever. The other 200 that's non-disputed is what they should have really, you know, focused on.
Yeah, well, you could take six pieces of evidence in the Simpson case and put him on death row.
Wow. Now, let me ask you a question. I was with some criminal attorneys. I'm on some criminal charges here in Tampa, if you can believe it. And I was
kidding.
No. Have you? Wow. You've not heard about my deal?
No, I haven't heard about your deal, but I heard there's a little bit of crime in Florida. I don't know. Maybe it was a rumor.
We need to get a rumor?
If I ever became mayor, I'd get Furman to be my police chief.
But like, hey, you there know, you go.
I mean, hey, you know what? I want to know the mayor that's got the nads to say, hey, you know what, ladies and gentlemen, I won by a landslide. I'm the most popular guy ever. Guess who's my new police chief? Mark Furman's my boy. Come on down, Mark. Florida needs you.
There you go. Let's do it.
Anyway, I was with some criminal guys last week, as a matter of fact, and one of them was a state attorney for 17 years in this area, and he's like, and we actually started talking about the OJ case, and he said, you know where, and this is his personal opinion, being a former prosecutor and now on the criminal defense side, he's like, where they messed up is when the defense, or the prosecution, I should say, had OJ try the glove on. Because anybody can make their hand not fit in something. Anybody could do that.
Why would you do it anyway? You've got his blood on it. You don't need to see if it fits. Who cares if it was a tight fit or a loose? Who cares if he borrowed the gloves or stole them? Who cares if they were at the house and they were Ron Goldman? Who's care if they were Ron Goldman's pocket? That's not the point. The point is, how do you explain your blood, Simpson? How do you explain everything there? Yeah, and Chris Darden, he should have never been in that courtroom. And, you know, a lot of people kind of...
Well, he was banging Marcia, though. He had to get in there.
You know, I don't pay attention to most of those things. I could really care what people do privately, but I'll tell you one thing. When you come into a case like that, your trial experience in the last 7 years was two cases, both against cops, I think you got a problem.
Yeah, and when you're supposed to... And meanwhile, you know, they have to have you, a cop, up there, and you got Darden up there, who's not pro-cop. You know.
Well, you know, Darden always knew, and I kept asking him to go play basketball. He knew I could take him one-on-one. He held this so close.
He didn't want to get beat by a cracker on a one-on-one deal and down there in Compton. Hey, you know, the other thing is the defense attorneys that I had, you know, they were like, you know, they don't understand why Marsha Clark and the guys did not use OJ's when he was on the phone. He was like, oh, I'm sorry, and I've had a good life. Their stance was... Clark's stance was that it may bring sympathy to O.J. I think that convicts him right there.
No, and it's funny. Defense attorneys don't get it, and it's pretty simple. In the interrogation, why didn't they use the interrogation?
What was that all about?
Well, the interrogation, I mean, it was actually publicized. 32 minutes of interrogation. Simpson never wanted his rights read to him. He had no attorney there, and Lang and Van Adder went through this. This is the only time they were ever going to talk to him before he lawyered up. And they sat there and they asked him all these questions, and they forgot to ask him one. Did you kill her?
Oh, he flat out didn't ask her.
Oh, yeah. A defense attorney will have a heyday with this. It's like you're in court and you got the lead detective up there, and they go, well, you think he did this? Yeah. You think he murdered these two people? Yeah, yeah. Then do you want to tell me why you never ask him? And then the same thing in the slow speed pursuit. We got a guy with a gun to his head, babbling uncontrollably and whining. And
With a disguise.
With a disguise and all this crap going on, and then Lang, who's got him on the cellular phone, and they're recording it, never says something really simple. Why'd you kill her, O.J.?
Yeah, I mean, Lang just would have flat out said, O.J., we know you're hurting, but why did you do it?
Yeah,
and then you subsequently, you could have used his response in court. Why didn't? Yeah, what were they thinking on that deal?
You're not going to use it if you never ask, because if you don't believe he did it, then how can you be the lead detective, and how can you make this case on him? And then... why, if you want to put forth all this experience and all these homicides and all this credential crap that you look, you know, you put on a resume, and yet you prop yourself up like that and then go, well, you want to tell me why you never asked the suspect? if he did it. It's crazy. And so Marcia can spin all this sympathy stuff she wants, but it's because detectives blew it.
I think most of America, Mark, to be honest with you, is really disgusted by it. And I think I think you kind of got railroaded. And the reason being is this. You can't put one word on a man and taint his credibility as a person when there's no, as a human being, there's no word police. There's no, we can use any word we want. And whether you're in parody, whether you're in character, whether you're acting, or whether you're just hanging out with the boys, using a word, and using the N-word, I'll even say that, using the N-word does not make you a corrupt individual. We've all used it.
We've all used racial slurs of all kinds.
Every one of us. The president of the United States has probably used it. And don't think that the blacks don't use it against other races, and the Chinese don't use it against other races, and the Mexicans don't use it against everybody. Does it, Mark?
Everybody does it, and the standard or the bar is always raised when it behooves somebody that has a lot of money to hire a lot of people that will say anything that makes them more money. That's it in a nutshell. This case would have gone nowhere. It's been tried 1,000 times in L.A., 10,000, 100,000 times in L.A., and the judge says, you know, if there's something relevant here, spit it out. If there isn't something, there's an issue about the officer's conduct. Contact Internal Affairs. Continue.
You don't blow it.
Oh, absolutely. When I was sitting there, during the whole thing, you know, I'm not watching it, but I'm certainly getting the feedback of what's going on.
Right.
When I'm watching what's going on, I kept wondering to myself, and I was a little silent about it because I figured all these people are on board. Why is he opposing the law that has been entrenched, I mean, written in granite for decades about laws of evidence? Why is he so confused? I've watched his judges over 20 years. You know, these issues come up, and they're decided on within minutes, not months. And Ito has some kind of problem with making decisions and controlling his courtroom and understanding the simplest things of materiality and relevance, and he just let it spin out of control. And it was really too bad, because he made the criminal justice system seem like some kind of squishy thing. It's very tight. There's not a lot of gray areas, and the gray areas are decided on by the judge very quickly. Very confusing to me.
Your new book is called Murder in Spokane. Now, did the Spokane police come to you to help catch Robert Yates, or did you go to them?
No, it was kind of a mishmash. I was doing a radio show. I do a radio show twice a week in Spokane on crime. You know, you talk about famous cases, you talk about things that are going on in the community, this type of thing. And all of a sudden, we start having women turn up dead. And then there's a little research done by myself and Mike Fitzsimmons at KXOY. There's been a lot of women in the past, and then all of a sudden somebody starts dropping women all over the place. And we basically have a serial killer in my backyard, and we start engaging everything on the radio concerning the serial killer and kind of, well, this, you know, just kind of giving the public kind of a heads up. Well, this must be going on. And
via the radio program.
Yeah.
Right.
The task force must be doing this, and they weren't. They were basically, collecting information, putting it in a computer, and collecting DNA from every white male on the planet, it seemed like. And the very first murder case they could have solved, easy as pie. I couldn't believe it. When I finally found out after, 13, 14 women had been killed right there in Spokane.
Wow.
They released the information that the first victim got into a white Corvette, a white 75 Corvette, driven by a white male, 30 to 40. Now, within 30 days of the police getting that information, they put it out to a few officers, and an officer stops Robert Yates, the killer, in his white Corvette. The guy knows it's a murder suspect. He makes a little field interview card, which is a little less than a ticket, and lets him go on his way. And then when they catch Yates years later, when Yates catches himself, the officer gets propped up there as developing the clue that caught him, and he says, well, I didn't want to tip him off. He was a serial killer, so I just wrote a field interview card.
So he let him kill more people.
Meanwhile, he could have detained him. How many people did Robert Yates end up killing?
Well, at least probably 18 that we know about, and God knows how many he killed in his military career. You know, Germany, where he was stationed for 2 years, has still got 26 dead unsolved prostitute homicides. He traveled across the country three times by himself in a car. We know how that works out for serial killers.
Right, exactly.
He was killing in 1975. He killed a couple that he went to college with, and they never solved that.
So Mark helped get this guy.
Yes, Mark.
And that's what the book is about.
And the book is also about how the Spokane police agencies didn't work with each other. If they would have worked with each other, they could have caught the guy a lot sooner.
Yeah, it's an interesting story because there's a lot of things that are going on. Not only are they doing what they always did, and they're not bringing themselves into the 21st century. I mean, they think that technology is going to do everything, but technology is something that, you know, you dot your I with. You got to do all the other police work before. They totally ignored it.
No.
And then at the same time, I'm struggling with my transformation from a detective to a journalist, and that was really it was something I just had to finally realize that loyalty to cops only goes so far as the truth and if they're doing it correctly. And if they're not, they won't help themselves, then you go ahead and you state the story and you don't make it soft and pretty and fuzzy and everything else. You just tell it the way it is.
Now, Mark, on the OJ deal, when the DNA evidence they had, you know, well, obviously, I mean, it was like there was only like a 1/1,000,000,000th chance that it could not have been OJ, correct?
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, they actually had OJ's, some of his blood at the murder scene, correct?
They had it everywhere.
He had it
at the murder scene. They had it on the gate. They had it in his driveway. They had it in his Bronco. They had everybody's blood in his Bronco. They had everybody's blood on the glove.
They had Nicole and Ron's in his Bronco.
Oh yeah, it was evidence rich to the point where you're never going to see a case like that.
Well, Mark, in a very simplistic type fashion, how did they lose then? I mean, you know, what went wrong?
Well, I think any time that you listen to an uninformed public, and let's face it, everybody except for the police and the prosecutor and the defense attorney is truly uninformed.
Which, I mean, honest to God, we really are. And I'll get into that here momentarily because a year ago.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery. What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We had OJ in the studio, like sitting 2 feet from me. Part of that internet ask OJ deal.
Yeah.
And we had him in the studio, and his handlers said that if you get up, you know, if you really start busting his balls, he's going to leave. So we just let him say his deal. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, you know, how did he get away, Mark? How did he do it?
Well,
I mean, if they got that much DNA on him, and they tried to paint you as the bad guy, you know, that supposedly tainted it or whatever.
And who is this guy Michael Nigg he keeps bringing up? Is that a farcical character, or is that a real person?
Who did you say?
A guy named Michael Nigg.
Who's that?
That's a guy that he brought up as a possible suspect.
Yeah, that's who OJ was bringing up, supposedly.
Simpson should look in the mirror more often. You know, everybody says, why'd this happen? Well, I think everybody should look at themselves, and the next time somebody, a professional athlete, walks through a restaurant or something and just have them relive how they acted and what they said. They put these people on a pedestal. I mean, let's face it. What's O.J. Simpson's contribution to the world? He carries a piece of leather in 100 yards in under 10 seconds. That's it.
Now, O.J. said, and I'm sure that, you know, it was obviously him, you know, I said in the heat of the moment, said he would love to sit down on a one-on-one with you, like over the internet for some kind of deal, you know, and because he's never had a chance to talk to you one-on-one. That's what he said.
I'll debate him at Cambridge. I'll debate him on TV. I'll debate him at any law school. I'll debate him at USC Law.
I would love to see that.
I've challenged him several times. I've challenged everybody in this case, and nobody will do it because they've all got something to hide. And Simpson, I mean, he doesn't. I mean, let's just face one thing. What is Simpson except for a football player? Well, he's a terrible father. He's a terrible husband. He's terrible to all women. He certainly isn't smart. The only thing he does is play football, and yet we elevate him to this level and think he has some kind of hidden intelligence, some kind of reasoning, some kind of way that he can woo us. He has a nice smile, and he was worked for a long time to how to work people. That's all he is.
Now,
it's unfortunate, but that's why we can't see him as a murderer.
One thing, Mark, that I wanted to tell you what he said to us when he was in the studio, and you can tell me if this is caca or true or whatever. I'm just like, OJ, you know, tell us. I asked OJ, say, OJ, tell us something that we as the public don't know. Maybe some behind the scene of legal posturing or something that happened during the you know, OJ case that we don't know about. And he said, and this is what he said, and I definitely want to get your reaction on the deal. He's like, well, what Ito would not allow this to be known, but LA County PD settled 3 Mark Furman racial suits just prior to the O.J. Simpson trial going on trial, just so they wouldn't look good, bad against their record. Is that true?
No, and the funny thing about it is any L.A. cop that is actually doing police work, like any big city, you're always being sued because it's the first level of defense for any attorney. That's the first thing said. The other thing is I had 3, 4, 5, 6 over the last 10 years suits for arresting people that had committed crimes. And I'll give you an example. One he's talking about is a man I shot during a robbery. Now, I'm sorry, Simpson, but I put together a series of robberies, and these two individuals were going up to ATMs and waiting for weak, helpless people, and they were threatening to shoot them and stab them. And unfortunately, one of these guys didn't want to give up, and he braced himself, and he got his young butt shot.
Kick
now,
ass.
It's not my fault that he was black, and it doesn't make it a racist issue. It doesn't
and you were,
it a
and
racial
I'm,
issue.
And I'm sure after, and I'm sure you were cleared by the department.
Oh yeah, it was a good shooting.
Clean shoot.
It was a good shooting because the guy did something. I gave him an opportunity to give up, and then he went for it, and he ended up getting shot. So that's
and it didn't matter, and it wouldn't have mattered in your police work if the guy was green, black, white, or multicolored.
Never did. And here, this is the interesting thing that this country kind of fails to see, and it's kind of interesting that the very people that are the suspects really forget this part. Every person that commits a crime decides what they're going to do. Cops only react and investigate to the evidence that they have seen on the report. And if you're black or white or brown, whatever you color you are, you dictated the attention you get from the police department.
Now, Mark, when you went to Brentwood, you were one of the first detectives there, were you not, Mark?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously they're saying, and it did not happen, but they're saying the Dream Team says that Mark planted the glove. That was the whole big controversy, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, they lied.
And
they lied to you. And
you found the glove. You actually went in the back there by Cato's place, and you found the glove, right?
Yeah, because Cato told me to go back there.
Oh, Cato told you.
Sure. He told me there's a big pounding on the wall. He didn't know what it was, thought there was an earthquake, and since, you know, I'd been up for a while. I knew there was no earthquake.
Right.
You know, it became an unusual circumstance that you must investigate. That's why they call us detectives. We're supposed to investigate unusual happenings, especially surrounding a double murder.
So you went in the back, saw the glove.
Why do you think I went back there?
To see possibly what was causing the pounding.
Well, think about it. You have a blood trail coming up the driveway. You have blood in a Bronco, blood on a Bronco. You just came from a double murder scene where somebody walked down the side walkway and through a gate, dripping blood, and got into a vehicle. Well, let's put this together just like cub detectives that we are. Suspect or victim leaves the Bundy scene, gets into a vehicle. We find a vehicle with blood, more blood dripping up and into the house. This is a clue. Yeah, well, you know, and then you hear a pounding on the wall. What is that pounding? Was it a signal? No. Was it a couple of bangs? Like somebody could have collapsed in the rear walkway? Yes. Could it be a suspect? Yes. Could it be a victim? Yes.
So what is the victim? I mean, the defense saying that you took vials of three separate people's blood and spread them throughout the Bronco and throughout his house and on the wall and on the glove.
I don't know where I got this. I don't even have my own blood. So, I mean, you know, this is crazy.
Yeah, like you're gonna have that in your back pocket, just you know, right, just waiting to go.
You know, it's funny, but this is a perfect example of the left-handed compliment. You know, they can't attack the way I was a detective, which was I questioned the unexplainable and the strange, and I question what's been answered, and I don't take anybody else's answer for it. I find out for myself. I was never a guy that stood around with the detectives with his hands in his pockets and waited for somebody from downtown from a lab to come and do my work. I went and did my work myself. That's why I discovered evidence, because I'm not lazy and I'm not standing around waiting for somebody else to do it. There's always something to do. This is what F. Lee Bailey, if you go back and look at that testimony,
right,
it was the worst challenge to police work I've ever encountered on the stand.
Mark, was all three victims' blood found at
2-2?
I'm sorry. Was both Goldman's and Nicole's blood found at Brentwood?
Well, yeah, they were dead there.
I'm talking about at OJ's. Did he subsequently track the blood into his house too?
Well, you got to remember that the glove had everybody's blood, Simpson's and both of theirs. Now that's an indictment that goes way beyond anything I've either seen. And then you have everybody's blood inside
the Bronco.
Exactly where it should be.
Do you think he did it by himself?
Do you think he did it by himself?
Oh, yeah, it's very easy. Very easy. The victims were killed at two different times.
Oh, what do you think the time span between the two were? Do you think that Goldman was killed first or Nicole was killed first?
Well, Nicole was definitely rendered unconscious first. Goldman came in, the attack was on, Nicole wakes up, and he finishes her off. It's definitely the way it went down, just from the forensic evidence at the scene.
So you think possibly Nicole came out to see what OJ wanted, he rendered her unconscious, Goldman came out to maybe defend her, he offed her, and then did Nicole on the backside.
Goldman never knew there was even anything going on. We can really see this forensically when, you know, she has to be laying unconscious when Goldman walks through the gate. Simpson's hiding in the trees or the bushes there. He cradles Nicole's head in his lap because 35 of her hairs are found on the front of his shirt.
Oh, wow.
That's definite. That occurred. And
I cannot understand, Mark, how the hell he got out of there. I can't. I mean, how the hell he got away. I can't see it.
Well, it was very quick. People don't understand. You watch boxing?
Yeah.
How many blows do you think George Foreman, the heaviest heavyweight we've ever seen in the last two decades, how many blows do you think he throws in a boxing match in 3 minutes?
Oh, God, maybe 50, 60?
You're right, 45 to 50.
Right.
Now, that man's throwing that many blows in 3 minutes. You want to tell me how 24 stab wounds take so long from a guy that's all adrenaline up? He's got a knife, the other guy has nothing. He outweighs him by 40 pounds.
And he's a former athlete. He could get that done in no problem.
Pretty easy fight. And the first two wounds that hit Ron Goldman's right side of his chest were fatal.
For the heart deal.
He just didn't know he was dead.
Now, Ron, what's the theory on the thumping? Do you think OJ went back to his place and then actually was beaten on Cato's wall?
No, he wasn't beaten on it. He just collapsed there. In other words, just hit the air conditioner that was sticking out.
Out of exhaustion.
Walkway. Yeah, he was going... He was going all the way around. You could go all the way around the bungalows in the back and come into the rear courtyard by the pool and then enter the back of the house because one key fit every door in the house.
Oh, so he was back
there. It doesn't really matter, yeah.
And obviously, you know, obviously tired from having just killed two people and your adrenaline going crazy. You're nervous trying to get away with it. You're scared to death.
He's scared to death. And, you know, one of these people that are involved in this rage-based attack on women, they're very much the same personality profile.
Now, when you were in court, Mark, with OJ, did you stare him down at all?
Oh, yeah. I didn't take my eyes off of him.
Wow.
But he looked away.
He wouldn't look in the eye? He wouldn't look in the eye?
No, he would for a while, but then he couldn't deal with it, so he looked away. Then I started staring at Bailey. Every time he looked up, I was looking at him. He didn't like that either.
Wow.
playing mind games with
him. The book is
called Murder in Spokane. He also, if you want to read books about OJ, he wrote a book called Murder in Brentwood, and he has a book about the Martha Moxley case, which is called Murder in Greenwich.
The Murder in Brentwood was a bestseller, wasn't it?
Yes, both of them.
Yeah, that was, I looked at that list that I was the number one on the New York Times bestseller. I look at some of the books I was on that list with, and it just kind of hit me last year. I was on a list with Angela's Ashes and In the Garden of Good and Evil, and I was on top of these, so I felt pretty cocky for a couple of weeks.
And I hope you made some good money on the deal, too. You deserved it.
Publishing and writing books is a good living, but you're not gonna make your it's not the Holy Grail, believe me.
You know, Mark, we got to get going now, but I would love to recall you sometime and just talk some more about this. I think most of America is riveted by this. I'm honest to God, no matter how long ago it happened, you know, it's the one of the most scandalistic things we've ever had to deal with in our lifetime. And we're talking to a person that knows more about it than anybody and got pinned as the bad guy when inevitably he was railroaded into this deal. And most of corporate America and people like us, whatever you may construe that as, thinks that this guy was dead on. I mean, dead on, right.
Well, I appreciate that. Anytime you want to do a show, you know, you got the number. Just save it and call me up.
I would love to call you, man. And Mark, my name is Bubba the Love Sponge, and I appreciate you going on. And, man, and again, I'd like to give you a call in a couple of weeks if it's okay with you.
When you get that mayor spot?
Yeah.
I'll be waiting for the call.
Absolutely. But, you know, I get you like a $150,000 police chief job.
That'd be okay. Do I get a car and a secretary I get to pick?
You get a secretary, you get to pick, a car, and maybe like a helicopter, too.
Oh, cool.